Hello, everybody, and welcome back for the May Metroplexity podcast. This is Kinnick, also known as Landon Winkler, coming back to you. Apparently, this is podcast number 10, which is kind of cool in that nice round number sort of sense. Should be the last podcast before we release the new side quest. That's coming along pretty nicely. Got kind of the beginning done and the end done. Need to make some of the fiddly bits in the middle still. And like the quest log and stuff like that. So there's still some work to do, but it's not terribly long. I would expect, assuming that the kind of achy feeling in my throat isn't me getting sick, I would assume next weekend. So, that said, let's get into some questions. How goes quest progress up, basically, like I was saying? Oh, these are from Al, by the way. It's been going pretty well. And then this, once I'm done with this one, I will take a break, work on May's donation item, which includes some not donation-related content-y stuff, which will make sense when you get the item. Or at least when I announce what just happened there. So those will both be cool. It's still a bit out, obviously, for the Survivor's Quest. The side quest there does kind of plug into it, so that's good. You'll see. I'll roll in some other chunks of that as things go forward. How much time do you spend commenting and cleaning up your code? Is it pretty legible for somebody who's never seen it before, or is it a jumble of poorly documented symbols? Little column A, little column B. I do, indent things and try to provide decent variable names and that sort of thing, just best practices stuff, and comments that will help me at least. But a lot of it is not directly linked. So there will be a piece of equipment that grants a certain effect, like not one of the visible effects, but like some crazy side thing. And that where that actually comes up, it really could be anywhere. So going from actual gameplay to code is pretty hard. The code itself, I think, is fairly legible, but I don't think I could hand the code base to someone and have them necessarily understand it, even with the level of commenting I have on there. How many things do you work on at the same time? I work best with two or three programming projects going on at the same time, so that if I get stuck on one, I can move on and come back later with a fresh perspective. That's about what I was doing when I was originally, while I was unemployed. I was keeping two or three burners going. I'm doing that less now that I'm working again, because I find that if I get stuck on something, I probably have to work shortly anyway, and then that kind of gets me rejuvenated and I can go back and hammer things out. So it's kind of one-track mind right now. I might be able to re-diversify that, but yeah, it's more, I'll be thinking about a lot of things at once, but not all of them will be actively coded until I'm done. What is the personal section under your contacts for? I'm not sure if I'm actually ever going to implement this now, so I might just pull it out. But the originally the idea was to have like a friends list type things with your in-game acquaintances, which is to say that the business contacts are NPCs and personal contacts are other PCs. That was the thought, but I just haven't seen any real need for it, so I may pull that. But it's one of those things where if I'm going and messing around with the interface, there's a couple of other things I want to do. So I would end up getting sucked into a not like days and days and days project, but a, at least, you know, we'll say, day or two long project. So I just haven't gone in there to, and risk getting sucked into the vortex. Considered having anyone else join you on the podcasts? Well, definitely Puyo, like, she needs to move out here. Oh, actually, good news on that front. She got her transfer date, so she is done working at her old store on the 29th, so she should be moving out around then. And then, hopefully, we'll be getting, you know, new employment here through the transfer or, you know, various and sundry other means. So that'll be cool. That will actually just send an art request off to her today, but that'll speed those up pretty substantively. Let's see. Would it be feasible for the gang boss to stop using the explosive shot technique once he has used it 12 times? You don't get any explosive bullet drops at that point anyway, so it might make sense to make the fight a bit easier if someone's finding it hard. Not really. I mean, that's not really how techniques work in a general sense. I could probably fake something, switch it out for another technique of the appropriate chain once that happens. But obviously, when you have, you know, 12 copies of a technique in your deck, they don't actually go away between encounters. Which, if he's used it 12 times, that probably means you've died once or twice. So, that just kind of gets a little weird. I think that there's a point in the code where I could do that. I'll write that down so I don't totally forget it. Give me one second. Consider that written down. No promises, but I will take a look, and I think there's a really easy hook in the code for me to change that. If there isn't, I'm not going to worry about it, but I'll grab it. Alright, so that's it for Al. We've got a Cryptodynamic. How many caramel apples were actually found on Halloween? I'm reluctant to eat my only one, and I haven't heard anyone else mentioning having them. Let me check. There was actually... I might have cleared that data out, but there was a tracker on that. You'll have to forgive me being boring for a moment while I take a look at the database. Outfit. No, I already cleared it out because I'm a jerk. So, I am fairly sure that there were four of them. Don't quote that, but that's my best recollection, is that there were four that were found before everything went down. Let's see. How long did you expect it to take for people to start figuring out how to get the Crystal Feathers fights XP from the Feathered Cloaks? Quite a while. I mean, more so to get them consistently. I'd say people are really more or less on track. I get kind of aggravated messages from people, like on a, not like super regular, but like fairly regular basis since I released it, which is kind of funny, honestly. And I apologize to everyone who sent me one of those messages by saying that they're kind of funny, but it's just... It's like, we've discovered, like, these six things, and there's these six other things that we have to discover, but we haven't discovered those other six things, so we've made no progress at all. And it's just kind of like, well, no, not really. Like, the questions that you're asking make it very obvious that you understand at least, like, some of the stuff, which means that you're making progress, which means that you're just hating on yourself for no reason. That's kind of the common thread of the messages I've got on it. That said, I think the people are... This is about how long I expected it to take. There's one thing that I probably would have put in there explicitly if I had been thinking about it, but it's not what's been giving people problems, so I'm not worried about it. Any chance for some more book item of the month? They don't even have to be skills. I just like collecting books, especially Tomes of Forbidden Knowledge. Well, yeah. Yeah, definitely chance for it. I think... actually, there's something coming up, which you'll appreciate a great deal. Not donation-related, just general awesomeness. But the... I would expect most book item of the months to be items of the month. We'll say donation items or unearthly items. I'm not really sure how to pluralize. So it would be from the acronym, it would be item of the months, which is just weird. Okay, but anyway, acronymizing aside, I would expect most of those to be skills, just because that's kind of the. I mean, obviously, like not as a rule. Because you've got, like, the Tome of Binding, which is not skill-granting. But that's kind of the... Lord, I'm not sure how to phrase what I'm trying to phrase there. It's not the... sort of... symbolism is too lofty, but... iconography, I guess, is more what I'm going for, which doesn't sound any less lofty, but it's closer to what I'm talking about. That's sort of the iconography that we're... that you're going for, that I'm going for at least, with books. I mean, most of the time, you know, books or knowledge will lead you to either, you know, like actual in-game knowledge, like the various journals that you can get on the pirate ship, or, you know, techniques or skills or what have you. So with a donation item, it's not something that, you know, you'll use once and it'll go away, granting you some, a bunch of techniques or something, because those will drop off. It'll be either a skill, which can be permanent, or maybe, some kind of, like, usable item from the inventory. I'm not a huge fan of those, though. In that it basically makes things impossible to balance, if that makes any sense, it being usable from the inventory, unless you create like a category of items, like you would see with the summoning skills with the Halloween encyclopedia. Unless you have those balanced against each other, there's no way to create a item that fiddles the same slot, which isn't a huge problem now, but would be in the long run, just in the sense that the items in Zacks will be rotating out eventually, once that starts happening, you can't have irreplaceable items. And items that just sit in your inventory and grant you some benefit are kind of irreplaceable. Even if it's something fairly petty, you know, like the beating sludge heart. Yeah, granted, giving you some free petrol sludge every day is not, like, you know, the end of the world. Not game-breaking. But if that item were no longer available and it did anything even remotely useful, it would be a problem. Really, really beat it around the bush there, but I would expect most of the books that are future donation items, which there will be future donation items, some of which will assuredly be books, I'd expect most of them to be skills. I wouldn't rule out having, like, an offhand item or something, too, but for the most part. On the note of tomes, are there plans for any more things to capture with the Tome of Binding, or maybe things that already exist and just haven't found yet? Yeah. Actually, very yes. In that, there's something that is implemented. And I don't mean that in you haven't found it yet. I mean, it's coded in. You can't get to it at the moment. So yes, that will continue to be relevant to the, I'm sure, the longstanding ire of people who don't actually rescue Dr. Amundsen manually. I know it's not something that's likely to come about in the near future, but have you ever thought about Metroplexy merchandise? I'd certainly wear a third eye shirt. Some mints or something shaped like clips would also be amusing, although I suppose it's potentially troublesome. Actually, there is... Let's see if I can track this down. I did actually set up a Cafe Press store. Yeah, www.cafepress.com/metroplexity. And I didn't set it up really for this. I set it up because we needed Metroplexity shirts for advertising purposes for last Gen Con. So I kind of created the site and then ordered short shirts for us because that was the easiest way to get two custom shirts without, you know, silk screening things. If you even silk screen things anymore, I don't know how you do it mostly. Well, I guess you can do the print-on applique things. Those are pretty cool. Anyway, that aside. So, that is out there. And there are kind of like, there are Metroplexity shirts with like the Eclipse logo on the front, and then it says www.metroplexity.com in purple on the back. They actually look pretty snazzy. Particularly if you don't have like long hippie hair like me, and people can actually read the website. But that's neither here nor there. I could definitely add some more things into there. I'd have to get Puyo to get me a nice big image of the Third Eye logo, but that would be pretty trivial to put in there. And then maybe, like, I'm really tempted to put the stats on the back, but I'm a dork like that. I will think about what to put on the back, and I totally just sent that request to Puyo, but let's see. I will get that over there. And I will link to the Cafe Press store from the blog, from the dev blog, so that people can see that. Okay, I think that answered the question. In that, it's actually really, really easy to create merch on Cafe Press. Sort of expensive per unit, so like the cost tends to be higher than I would like it to be. Or maybe I'm just really old and stuff actually just costs more money than I'm used to. But yeah, there's some stuff there now, and there could very easily be more stuff in the future. So I will endeavor to add a Third Eye shirt to there as soon as I can get some art from Puyo for that. From Raziel, Son of Cain. Damn, a plush Twisted Hound or Horrific Spider mascot, anyone? Ooh. That would be flippin' amazing. The ooh there was plushes are giant pain. Although Puyo, this is not helpful to us at all. Puyo does know a person who makes, like, these adorable little plushies that are, like, I want to compare them to the Dragon Quest slimes. They're just kind of like Hershey's Kiss or, you know, Dragon Quest slime shaped. And then they have, like, you know, the little, like, in whatever, you know, color and fabric or whatever, the little features to make whatever character. They are amazingly adorable. Like, ridiculously adorable. Puyo has a little one for Fleur from Transformers Animated, who is about 10,000 times cooler than Blur from original Gen 1 Transformers, if only because original Blur, it requires face punching. It's required by law. Let's see, I'll edit in some comments and questions later, or, you know, maybe not. As for the books, I would love some new ones as well. Done. He's reading through Cthulhu Tech books, preparation for Eclipse Phase campaigns, probably esoteric and non-Euclidean. Yeah, I'm a fan of the Cthulhu Tech books. They're a good read. They're a bit... Okay, so I'm going to just totally wander into land and world for a bit here, but I find a lot of campaign settings have a really similar problem where there's so much going on that the detail of what's going on overwhelms the themes. And I think that the themes are a lot more important, personally. So, for example, while we just talked about Cthulhu Tech, it's when you're reading through it, especially like, you know, the setting chapters where those themes have to come out the most, it ends up seeming really fractured because they'll be talking about, you know, the what I would consider stuff that's on the main theme, like the first invasion of, well, I guess the development of dimensional engines, and, you know, that driving a bunch of people insane, because it's, you know, Cthulhu Tech. And then the first invasion of the Maigo, and the Mizzati defecting, and all this stuff. But then it kind of, like, wanders off into all of these little divergent points. And, like, it doesn't seem like a full setting without doing that a little bit, but I feel that a lot of people, as designers, are tempted to do that a lot too much. I don't think Cthulhu Tech's necessarily even terrible at it. It's just an industry-wide thing. And I don't say that in the sense that I'm any better at it than they are, because the main game that I've played a lot of that, like, I created tabletop-wise, well, we created it as a group effort, had the same sort of problem, like, in a pretty bad way. In the way that the theme became unclear, which is way worse than you get with Cthulhu Tech. Because, you know, the theme is still really obvious there, it's just, you kind of have to stop and think about it rather than it kind of, like, oozing out as the theme would want to do normally. The other one that I'm doing that with right now is I'm considering, I'm going to be starting up a new game, probably when Puyo gets into town, and I'll probably be running Eberron with Iron Heroes rule base and some modded classes. And by modded, I mean created from scratch. I'm not sure why I'd say modded. Because Iron Heroes by itself doesn't really have, well, it has a magic system, but it doesn't have a magic system that meshes with Eberron at all. It has, like, Conan-style magic system. And so I'm going through that now, and it's just like, you know what the main themes are, only really because you're told what the main themes are. And don't get me wrong, like, I still like the setting, I'm still, you know, running a game in it, but, like, the just sheer amount of, like, why does this country need to be here, gets pretty intense after a while, which, admittedly, Cthulhu Tech handles that way better, because, you know, it's Earth, like, any country that hasn't gotten annihilated just kind of assumed to be there, which is nice, but, yeah, it's like, Anduar is, I'm not sure if that's even pronounced correctly, but this is the one that got me really used to Eberron, because I was, you know, looking through the setting and refamiliarizing myself, and it's like, here's this entire country, like, there's, like, the five nations that, like, have the big war, and, like, three of them have, like, really strong, like, we're, you know, this type of country, really strong identities, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And then, like, there's one that's kind of like, we're the generic good country that, like, you know, you're kind of from as a PC or kind of your base of operations. And, like, that's fine, whatever. Like, they're kind of America in, like, feudal weirdness land. Okay, fine, whatever. And then you've got this other country that's, like, kind of decent, but, like, doesn't really have a strong identity at all, and it's just like, ugh. And then, of course, like, all of the other countries that I can't even keep track of. It's like, why do we need an entire country of pirates? I don't know. I really have no idea. Anyway, alright, so completely setting aside my giant diversion about how having giant diversions while you're talking about your setting decreases the potency of your, you know, main themes. Can get back to Raziel's questions. It would be fun to get a bookcase furniture for our apartment that will show all of the Eldritch tomes we gathered and maybe conferred some bonus based on the number of gathered tomes or library upgrade for gang warfare. I would... that's the sort of thing that I would definitely consider putting in, either as some sort of slot mechanism, well, sort of like how Kingdom of the Loving uses their bookcase, so that you have a visual interface for different types of books and how they're used. But beyond that, I would consider just having, like, something where you can collect books and accumulate bonuses from them, because that's just cool. It probably would not be a donation item. Like, that's the sort of thing where it would probably be a separate item that you can get somehow. That would be... that maybe you could even put donation items on, like there might be donation item books to go into it, but having the entire thing be a donation item, it would probably not get the amount of updates that I'd want to give something like that to keep it going and alive and vibrant, if that makes any sense. So, I'm not sure if that came across, but yes, good idea. I actually might go ahead and do that. That's... I'm not immediately coming up with a place to put it in, but I will think about that. Moles. Why does Dr. Emmonson think that it's sexist that her codename was Sif? I think that's a question I couldn't remember last time. Dr. Emmonson doesn't specifically think that that's sexist. I mean, Sif is pretty badass. Like, that's not a biggie. She thinks that it's sexist in general that everyone's code names were divided by gender. So, like, all of the guys had male code names, and all of the women had female code names. And she just thought that was a little off with the rest of with the way that things should have been working in that department. But she's kind of sensitive to things like that. I guess most anyone would be if they gone up to be a... well, Midgard isn't great with that stuff to begin with, and going in as a female IT person is not a cakewalk either, says the guy in the entire IT department that doesn't have female workers at, like, his level. Like, there are some female managers, but, like, no, like, actual IT worker bees. Kind of, I'm not going to say scary or even, like, sexist, but just, like, not an environment you necessarily want to go into. Sort of in the same reason that boys' schools and girls' schools cause nothing but problems. Magnifico. The most reliable known method for getting a genuine owl feather to drop, or to do those things one would like to have it equipped, is to walk away from every choice adventure. Since it only seems to count when walking away takes an energy that's roughly 100 clicks per hour for the gotten used, is there a better method we have yet to discover? I'm going to say yes, in that there's a lot more investigation that needs to take place before you can really get into the nitty-gritty like that. Having nothing but choice adventures and doing nothing but walking away will almost assuredly get you an owl feather, as you've noticed, but that's by no means the best or only way to get one. And is really, like, even completely ignoring the fact that it takes a bunch of clicks, like, even if, you know, you had a script set up to do it all for you, which I don't encourage, but even if you had a script set up to do it all for you, that's still really fucking wasteful, punching yourself in the genitals. So, like, even if that were the only way to guarantee it, and if it did guarantee it, it would still be a really terrible idea. So, I'm not really sure I... Even if all of that were true, I'm not sure I really care that it would take that many clicks. Because, I mean, there's, like, you kind of have to assume that there's a certain number of your players that are going to obsessively optimize things to the extent of causing themselves discomfort if what they have to do to optimize things is discomforting. You have to kind of stop them or, like, make it so that the optimization is, at least, like, not terribly unpleasant. Because they'll do it either way, and then they'll complain about assing themselves. That said, even completely admitting all of that, and taking all of that into account in design, that's really suboptimal. Like, even if everything you said was true, and that's the only way to guarantee getting an owl feather, I would still not really think that was a huge problem. Simply because there's no earthly way that the difference in utility between getting an owl feather and getting one of the other feathers would be enough to counterbalance the amount of other stuff that you'd be losing out on. If people want to obsessively do stupid stuff, it doesn't really bother me as much. So, like, if you're doing something that's completely suboptimal, like, I don't know, like, you're manually running your deck out of techniques every fight, and then dying, or something like that. You can do it, but there's no good reason to do it. And even if there was, like, some perverse, you know, benefit, and there are some places where, you know, dying does do things that are less bad than normal, it still wouldn't counteract the inherent problems there. If any of that made any sense. Anyway, a root answer is don't even worry about it. There are much better ways to go about doing that. Secondary answer is, even if that were, like, the best way, it's not actually the best way. And I wouldn't really let it trouble me a whole lot. Is there something to do with vicious poetry that's yet to be discovered? If I say yes, you would be completely right to, like, punch me in the stomach. There's a couple of, like, little things, but, like, nothing of great interest. It's one of those things that I will probably hook back into later for more excitement. But I don't think there's anything in particular right now. There's not, like, another level of awesome poetry past there or anything like that. Voles is talking about the owl feather thing. Ifco's talking about the owl feather thing. Voles talking about the owl feather thing. Okay, here we go. Actual question. Sir Cheddar, what do you think about Kingdom of Loathing introducing combat macros? I guess if the question is, will I ever do something like that, the answer is, I don't want to close the door on it, but not really. Like, no. To answer the direct question, it's a good choice for the way that they have combat set up. The way that they have combat, there's kind of There are fundamentally two options. You can either make it as painless as possible, or change it up so that it's, so that there's more to it. And I think that for the type of game that they've created, I think what they're doing there is totally the correct option. And with a game that's been around that long, going back and changing stuff up is would be pretty painful. And I totally understand why they wouldn't do it. I don't think that if a system like that would work well in Metroplex City, I don't really want it to work well. Like, I'd rather people have to pay attention, not for the sake of them having to pay attention and have to be sitting there, but for the sake of it actually being an entertaining game. And, like, there are... Okay, I guess backing up, there are a number of levels that you can play a game like this at. I think Kingdom of Loathing has sort of two levels that it's played at by different player groups, and I'm sure someone will come along and shank me or something for leading out a group. But they're basically the people who are there to enjoy the content. And people who are there to optimize on a sort of metagame level. In which you're not playing the encounters, you're playing the zones, almost, if that makes any sense. When you're at that sort of level, you're not worried about, you know, winning or losing the fight. You're worried about whether you're getting a fight, whether you're getting some other kind of encounter, you know, your maximum XP per whatever and all that stuff. What I would like to be able to do, and this is kind of a holy grail type thing, so, I mean, but to say nothing of a very personal sort of perspective thing, is that sort of middle ground where you actually have to, where there's a band of fights, or a band of, we'll say, content, where you have to be paying attention to what you're doing, you have to make intelligent decisions, and then when you fall out of that band, like, into, you know, stuff that you've passed, basically, you can just blow through that and do whatever you want, and operate in a very metagame-y sort of way. And I think we're there, and if we're not there, we have the tools to be there, and it's just a question of, you know, making sure that that band is A, fairly wide, and B, keeps up with the players as they're going through content. Which is to say, like, you start a reset, and Sunset Park is kind of its own little exception, because it shouldn't be, like, super hard, but you have to kind of pay attention, like, a little bit. And then, like, the docks, you pay attention. But, like, if you went back to Southside Park during that, you wouldn't necessarily have to pay attention there, if that makes any sense. Anyway, they're going a different direction with their design, and I think that combat macros are a great addition for what they're going for. That's not the direction I'm headed. And I don't really want that to be the direction I'm headed. Both because that's not the kind of game that I want to design to begin with, and also because they've kind of already done that, and that would be kind of retarded. I mean, I don't see them as competitors at all. Like, kind of the exact opposite. But I think that having two games serving is actually, like, the same niche, when you have this small number of this type of games, is just kind of silly. So, I think I answered all of that. So, short answer, we're not going to, but I think it's a really good idea for Kingdom of Loathing. Moles, care to respond to following theory about the unearthly coin that he came up with off the top of his head right now? Let's see. The unearthly coin keeps track of the actions, a little morality counter. Feed an orphan, get a warm coin. Second orphan you feed, get a hot coin. Some sort of stat requirement, maybe base will for each level of coin effect. If you don't meet the requirement, you get the coin is too intense, and you loosen your grip, or setting the more abstract or hot, cold. Believe it or not, the punniness in the last line above was unintentional. Warm, we'll say. Splitting the difference on the punniness. I'm sure that you can... Well, I'm not sure how you would go about testing that exact hypothesis, but I'm sure someone will be able to, and they'll be able to get you pointed. That's functional enough, I would say. But, yeah, not right, but, I mean, it would work. I mean, the hypothesis now is working, I suppose, either way. Moving on, now that people care about the scrap pit, hurrah! Is there any chance we can get a general indicator of how full the scrap heap or pit is before we raid it? Setting aside the fact, setting aside the sort of like inch, mile, layer of the request there, I'm really kind of okay with it being opaque. And maybe that makes me a terrible person, I'm not sure, but I'm kind of alright with gang stuff requiring, like, a little bit of communication, like, not like a ton of communication, but, like, if somebody doesn't get what they're expecting from the scrap pit, like, mention that to somebody, you know, gang leader or whoever. And if they can't, you know, get scavenging back up to the point where the gang wants it to be at, I mean, that's kind of a gang thing. And like I said, maybe that makes me a terrible person, but I'm actually... I think I can still sleep with myself at night, knowing that if the last, like, 10 people who took stuff out of the scrap pit didn't mention that it's getting low, you might get kind of shafted. So, there's that. Let's see. Voles, are there any undiscovered patterns in the mysterious puzzle arrangement? Recently I've been superstitiously exploring options from the bottom during resets, as it seems to reach the pyramid faster. Top down seems to hit the rod more often, and I don't remember the last time I went straight from box to tablet using either method. I'll leave that with the maniacal laughter. Okay, so that seems to be the extent of it. I will be, I guess, keeping in touch as far as the new side quest goes. There is a way to... There are choices that you can make that can result in the side quest not being available. So, I will try to get out a teaser or something, like a couple days, maybe 3-4 days before the side quest actually rolls out, so that people are aware of that. And it's obviously still up to everyone, like if they wanna, I just wanna give people the option that if they wanna reset and take it on, they can, and if they don't, well, then they don't have to. So, yeah, I guess that's your official clue for the side quest coming in. It can be blocked off by your previous actions. Choices matter. So, if you think you know what that means, think you know what the quest will involve, by all means, feel free to speculate on the forums, or, you know, try to get the jump on everybody else by collecting whatever you think you might need. So, that should be coming out, like I said, probably next weekend, but I'm a little done promising things for now until I get a better handle on how much work I get done in a day with working. That's it for now. Thanks for playing, thanks for listening, and thanks for donating. Like I said, we will have a donation item coming in this month that I think is pretty exciting and think people will be pretty excited about. And some non-donation content along with that, and then it's back to Survivor's Quest 24/7, I guess. Thanks. Have a good one.